Inspiration and marketing ideas for you and your business.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the latest Inspire Your Biz podcast. Don't forget, you can tweet us at Inspire Your Biz or message us on Facebook to let us know what you thought about the latest podcast. Today's guest is a life and laughter coach, and she's passionate about making people feel lighter, brighter, and more fulfilled in their day-to-day life. I'm your host, Roshan, and this is Caroline Hart. Hi, Caroline.
Hello.
How are you doing?
Really good, thank you.
That's great.
Really good.
So when we spoke...
Well, let's hope anyway, being a life and laughter coach, that I do feel good.
Imagine. So when we spoke last, I remember you talking about your passion for changing people's lives. But just how did you become a life coach?
Gosh, it was a really long journey. I guess I started by changing my own life, by experiencing just bit by bit how when I thought slightly differently, life became slightly different. And when I saw myself differently, life suddenly responded to me differently. And it was through that experiential journey of starting to see changes that I didn't understand way back when I left school and thought I was, you know, a no-hoper with no future, no brains and everything else. And it was then through doing something called an MVQ, I'm sure you've all heard of them, an apprenticeship program. And I suddenly thought, oh, gosh, I've got a certificate. I've never had a certificate in my life. Mm. And I got a certificate and I thought, oh, maybe I can. Maybe I'm not stupid.
Yeah.
And I started to see myself differently. So then I went on and I did the next level and got a bigger certificate. Very exciting.
Well
and
done.
It went on. I know, I had two certificates then. But that was the thing that changed me and started to go, oh my goodness, maybe how I perceived myself when I was younger is not how it is. Maybe they're just labels and maybe those labels don't have to rule me for the rest of my life. And I started to believe in myself. And then I went on to be an MVQ assessor and help other people do the same thing. But once I was doing that and helping people believe in themselves through education, I suddenly was curious because I knew there was more to it. There was more than just learning and getting a certificate. There was more to it. And I started to challenge myself more and I started to read self-help books. I read Fiona Harold, Be Your Own Life Coach. And I was like, wow. And then I read Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway by Susan Jeffers. And I started to challenge myself even more. And I ran a marathon from being a completely unfit person. I ran a marathon. And then I ran another one. And then I decided I was going to get elite time, so I did. And then I bought a house and renovated it myself and did all these things. And I just was amazed by what I could achieve if I chose to. And it was these self-help books that helped me do it and helped me challenge myself. And after I'd read enough, I decided that maybe I should be a life coach. Maybe I'd like to help people sort of just free themselves from those negative beliefs, that fear of getting it wrong, the fear of not being good enough, the fear of failure. And just because when you go for stuff, it's amazing how much stuff works out. So that's really my journey. And then obviously I got into the coaching and did coach training and NLP training and laughter training and integral eye movement training and got loads more certificates now.
So when you mentioned that you was labelled growing up, what was you labelled as and how did that hold you back and how did you move on from it?
I was an oddball. I would have considered myself an oddball. I was in the lowest sets at school, so I considered myself thick. I thought I was stupid. I didn't really fit in with people. I didn't feel that, you know, I had a couple of friends, but I was never fitted in. I never belonged. I was like, yeah, definitely an oddball. Massive influence. Really didn't like myself. You know, I used to panic in class and, you know, somebody asked me a question, I'd sit and pinch little bits of skin out my hand because I'd think, I don't know. And I'd, you know, do that to distract myself. Quite, you know, self-destructive, really. You know, it's quite sad when I think back to the little me. I think, oh, bless you.
And so obviously you're now a life and laughter coach. Can you tell us why you call yourself the life and laughter coach and how that came about?
Well, the life coach was because I did life coach training. So obviously calling myself a life coach when that's what my original training was made sense. And the laughter coach, I've since discovered the power of laughter and how it frees us so much. And I'm a laughter yogi and I run laughter workshops. So I guess it's just a case of doing what it says on the tin. I help people to laugh. I help people to get happier with their life. So life and laughter. just does what it says on the tin. The other great thing I have to say about having changed the label, because words have power, is I still am a life coach, but when I used to say to people I'm a life coach, they go, oh, and they wouldn't really respond. The really interesting thing I've experienced is now I say I'm a life and laughter coach, people go, laughter, tell me about that. And the engagement with people is so different because people are so curious about laughter, something that's so natural to us, so familiar, so part of our everyday life, yet it seems to fascinate people. And it's been really lovely because people have really warmed to that title and responded really positively. So I'm quite chuffed that I've got it, even if I gave it to myself.
That's good. And I remember before on that note of words, you spoke about the power of words. What can you tell us about that?
Gosh, words have so much power. If you think about what I was talking about, my history, the words that I gave myself, the labels that I wore, and I believed they were my truth. You know, back then they had a massive negative impact on how I was. But as the labels changed, I changed. So when I started to believe that I could, and oh my goodness, maybe I am a little bit clever. Maybe I do have high emotional intelligence. Things started to change. But language is more powerful than that. I mean, we all know language is emotive because we've all at some point said or had somebody say it to us, mind your language. So we know that words create emotions and power in terms of how we respond to them. But how often do we think about those everyday words, the words that we do use just day to day in conversation? Because they're the ones that truly, truly have power on us. What we don't realize always is every word we use is subliminally messaging us and people around us. So when we say to people, I don't know, do you feel good? People will respond to the word good. So to understand language, let's take this a stage further. The words come in through your ears, so you hear them. You go in your brain, you hear the words. But then to truly understand, so if I say to you, you know what it's like when you feel really good. To understand really good, you have to connect with good and you have to sort of feel it just for a microsecond to understand what good is. So every time we use those words, we connect with them for a microsecond. The same as if I said, well, you know what it's like when you feel a little bit less than good. The words would come in through your ears, process through your brain, then down you'd feel them. You'd feel good just for a second. And you go, yeah, it's not quite that. Well, yeah, not quite good. And that's how we process language. So every time we say words that represent a state, a feeling word, we give people that state for a microsecond. So, for example, if you are finding something a little bit less than easy, imagine how different it would be. Say you were doing maths. Maths is something quite a few people find less than easy. So you're doing maths, and imagine if I came along and was helping you, and I talked and you'd say, oh, yeah, you know, it's this, it's that. And I go, oh, yeah, I can see that you're finding that less than easy. Might seem a bit of a strange language, but for a microsecond, you're going to go to easy. Whereas the alternative, we could say, oh, that's really hard for you, isn't it? And if you use those words, you take the person to hard. And they go, hard, oh, yeah. Hard, yeah, I know what hard is. And they'd experience that for a microsecond. So sometimes just a linguistic shift like that can have a real power, a real power. Other words that can change things are why. Why is a good word. Have you ever had somebody say to you, why? Why are you doing that? What's going on? Why? Why can be quite a challenge word. So one of the things I say when I'm working with people that are perhaps in challenging situations in the workplace is I ask them if they can to remove the word why and use the word what. What were your reasons for doing that? What happened when? What happened to prevent you from getting here on time? And use that as a different way of asking, because why instantly people feel defensive. It feels like an accusation. So creating that shift can create huge connection, can just start to soften things and enable you to seek first to understand before being understood, which is one of Stephen Covey's statements in Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. Seek first to understand before being understood. Another word I love, another word shift is, and I love the word and. So often clients come to me and they're saying, oh, I don't know what to do. I can either do this or this or this or that. And I just say to them, oh, that's interesting. How different would it be if you could do that and that? And they go, oh my goodness. Because and is so inclusive. You don't have to make a decision between black and white. You can have all the shades of grey. So and is really great. And I play a game in some of my workshops using this. We do, it's from transactional analysis, actually, and Eric Byrne. And the game is the and but game. So I get everybody, it's really playful and really fun, but what's interesting is how people respond to it, is I ask them to create a silly party, like ridiculous, wearing marshmallow shoes and cotton wool hats on the moon or something. But the first round, I get everybody to sort of jump in with their idea, but say, yes, but we could do this. Yes, but we could do that. Yes, but the marshmallow feet would stick all on the floor. Yes, but the cotton wool hats could get wet. Yes, but we could eat sweets at the same time. The round would go like that. The second round, so I'd stop them and say, just notice what you notice about that round. The second round, we'd play the yes and game. So everybody say yes and this, yes and that, yes and that. And when the two rounds come to an end, I ask people how it was. And the feedback is it makes such a difference to say yes and, because yes but is like you're butting up against them. Like, but it's like, yeah, but that's your idea, but mine's better. It almost creates that competitive feeling. Whereas if you can change the but to an and, the yes and is saying, yes, I hear what you're saying and I want to add to it. So it's so inclusive and it helps build a collaborative way of working. And many of my clients in these workshops will say, what if the person we need to say, actually, that's not the best idea in the world, but that's really silly. Say, I don't know, say it's a young person that's just passed their driving test and they tell you that they're going to, their first car is going to be a Ferrari. You have a choice there to say, yes, but you're never going to be able to afford that and that's really not realistic. Or you could say, yes, and that's a really lovely idea. And I wonder how you're going to get finance for that, which is sort of accepting them, accepting their idea and acknowledging it, and yet still putting over the message that there's something that needs to be thought about. That change in words, that small linguistic change, can really change the way that message is received and the way that relationship unfolds. And I guess it's that passion that I've got for all of the words that we use and very, very simple things so can make such a difference. So using and instead of all, using yes and instead of yes but, using what instead of why, and also using that less than language. So when you're working with people, talking about the positives, because where attention goes, energy flows. So as much as possible, if we can keep all our language in the positive, then it's going to have an impact on us and the people around us, because they'll be hearing the words and we'll be gifting them those states at the same time, as well as gifting ourselves. It's a subject that just fascinates me, and there's so much more to it than this little snippet that I'm giving you right here and now. But it is amazing. Just become aware of your words. Start to notice the words that you're using and recognize that each time you say something, it's going to go in and have an impact. And I wonder how you could change your words.
It's just amazing, really, isn't it, to think about how something as simple as the words we use every day can really have an impact on our daily routine, on our attitude towards things we do. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's huge. It's huge. The saying, where attention goes, energy flows, is really, really... That's one of my favourite little sayings. I don't know where it came from, but it's so true, because what you give attention to will grow. It's like feeding it. So if you give attention to the positive, you will feel more of the positive. But also the opposite is true. And you choose.
Yeah. So if someone came to you and they said they're just really feeling down and they're just consistently feeling down, they just need to get out of this dark place, what would you say to them? Or what would you advise them to do?
So start off with, it's really important to acknowledge where they are. There's no point coming in and going, well, if you just think positive, it's going to be great. You'll be fine. Because actually when somebody's not in that state at all, you need to meet them where they are and gently lead them and show them. So I would start talking to them about how they felt and what created those feelings. So I'd ask them to explain to me how the feeling that as they are in that dark place, how they came to that, how it came about. And they normally talk about repeated thinking, about how they their internal dialogue, because though I've talked to you about words externally, just think about how we talk to ourselves in our heads. You know, the things that we say to ourselves and how they have an impact. So I'll find all that out, and then I'll start to suggest, I'll talk to them about the conscious and the unconscious mind. So your conscious mind holds about 7 bits of information plus or minus 2. It's basically very stupid. It's your unconscious mind where all the wonder happens. But what we don't realize is we're always, always programming our unconscious mind with what we say with our conscious mind. So the stupid bit programs the clever bit. It's crazy. I mean, you've experienced this, I'm sure, at some point in your life when you've been trying to think of something and you can't think of it and you say, oh, it'll come to me. And lo and behold, later on, you're getting on with something entirely different and that idea comes through and there it is. And you didn't even know your unconscious mind was processing it. But yet it's been doing it all the time. So that's evidence that when you ask your unconscious mind to deliver on something, it does. But of course, the unconscious mind, the clever bit, knows that the conscious mind can't take it all in because it can only take in 7 bits of information plus or minus 2. So we have to delete information, we have to distort, and we have to generalize, because otherwise the conscious mind just couldn't deal with it. What happens with the unconscious mind? So it filters based on what it thinks is important to you. So it will filter out stuff that it doesn't think is relevant. So it's like we put the filters down. So when you're feeling very blue and very low in that dark place, then you won't notice all the good stuff that's around you. You'll just miss it. And I guess the good example of experiencing the filters on our conscious unconscious, most people drive. So before you ever bought your car, whatever car you've got, you used to be out and about and you'd look around and there'd be car, 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 car. Then suddenly you decide that you're going to get a new car and suddenly it's like aliens have dropped them everywhere and they, you just suddenly notice all these cars that are the same make of you, as yours. And it's like the world changed overnight. Of course it didn't. All that changed was the filters. So you know what it's like when the filters change. So when we feel blue, what we're doing is the filters come down and we start to only notice opportunities and things that relate to our map of the world. So my job as the coach is start to change the filters to help that client start to change the filters. And one of the ways I'll do this is I'll offer them an activity called Three Good Things. The Three Good Things activity, I ask the client to go away and just every night I ask them to buy themselves a really nice notebook because most people like a bit of stationery. So that's nice in itself, treating yourself to something, and put that book by their bed. And every night before they go to sleep, just write down three things that were good about their day. Just three things. And I want the tiny things. You know, my water tasted fantastic today. I noticed a leaf drop down off a tree. I heard a bird sing. The tiny things that go on in your world all the time that are good, that we just get so busy in life that we don't notice. So that's what I ask the client to do. I mean, if they have something big that happens in their life that's really fantastic, like they get a new job or something like that, yeah, put it in the book. But we're not after that. We're after the little things. And what happens is to write these things down at night, the client has to write them down. So they have to come, they have to reflect back through the day and remember good stuff. Then write it down, which uses right side, left side of the brain. Write it down and then they can see it in front of them. So they're looking at it coming back in and they're doing all of this before they go to sleep. It's hard to do it, obviously, once you are asleep. So before you go to sleep. And that's when the brain, the unconscious mind, does all the filing. So before you're going to sleep, you're reminding it that there's good stuff in the world. And bit by bit, that on its own starts to change the filters. And of course, as clients go on, then they start the next day, start to look for the things that they're going to put in their book. And it starts to encourage them to then look for good stuff in their world. And that's probably the first starting point, just to start to change those filters and create a little bit of change. It's the simplest of activities, and yet it has a really powerful impact. Because sometimes the littlest things make the biggest difference.
Well, thanks for that. That was very interesting. I also noted down a lot of the books you mentioned earlier, the Fiona Howard Beyond Life Coach, all the fair and yeah. do it anyway. The third one you mentioned, Seven Habits of Highly Affected People. Who is that by? Yeah.
That's by Stephen Covey. He's just fantastic. There is an Eighth Habit as well, which is really good, but it's one of my go-to books. I highly recommend it.
Yeah, because I actually need to get some. I need to get some self-help books. I've been searching. I'm stuck between so many, trying to figure out which ones to choose.
Seven Habits is the one I revisit and revisit. I use it in business, in training, in corporate training. I will mention some of the habits. I use it in personal coaching. I relate to some of the habits. It's a fantastic book.
That's great. And do you have a favourite quote that you could leave with us today?
Oh, favourite quote. I did have one earlier that I was thinking of. Oh, I love Theodore Roosevelt. It's not a quote. I haven't got it in front of me. His talk where it's not the critic who counts, nor the how the strong man stumbles. It's better to be the man that is in the arena that experiences blood, sweat and tears. I can't think of it all off the top of my head. I did have it in front of me. I haven't got it. But yeah, definitely, that's a bit more than a quote, but it's a fantastic statement about, you know, be out there, go for it, do it. Be the one that, if you do stumble, you stumble while doing greatly. And at the very least, if you fail, you fail while trying hard. But if you succeed, you'll know the feeling of success and failure. And you won't be one of those cold, timid souls that are just looking on, watching and commenting. I think it's just the general thing to go for stuff. Life, sometimes it will work out, sometimes it won't. But at least you'll have gone for it and you'll feel so much better for having done it.
Well, thanks so much for today. Thank you for teaching us about the importance of words and giving us a few extra tips and books and things along the way too. But how can people get in touch with you?
So you can find me, you can email me, caroline@kentlifecoach.co.uk. You can find me on Twitter at Life Coach, or my website is lifeandlaughtercoach.co.uk.
Well, thank you for being on the show today.
Thank you so much. Thank you for asking me.
Have a great day.
You too. Bye.
Bye.
Connect with us on Facebook at Inspire Your Biz to subscribe to marketing and business tips.